Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk.
Tuning in to another edition of MTAS Radio, where our purpose is to encourage members of the African-American community to think about our roles and responsibilities to ourselves, families, and community. We believe that choices that are made are a direct result of information. That's why we want to continue to empower you with information and conversations like the one you'll hear today that will make you think and ultimately lead to actions where actions are so desperately needed. I want to invite you right now to like us on Facebook. That's Mightier Than a Sword. Also, you can join us online by going to www.m-tas.org. Again, that's www.m-tas.org. That's how you can visit us online. Folks, and while you're out there, be sure to go to the radio tab. Over 100 hours of thought-provoking conversations, information you can use, conversations that will cause you to ponder, that will cause you to think, and make sure that you're socially aware and aware of all the things that's taking place in our world, in our community, and in our society in general. Folks, to get your thoughts, views, and opinions heard each and every Sunday, 5:30 Central Time, do not hesitate to give us a call at 718-508-9533. That's 718-508-9533. That is the number to get your thoughts, views, and opinions heard each and every Sunday at 5:30. Folks, I'll be remiss if I did not encourage you to visit the resource tab while you're out there on our website. Folks, keep in mind that over 30 million Americans are currently at risk of losing their life insurance protection. If that's your situation, do not hesitate to give us a call at my office so that we can review that most important concern. Folks, that's right. Over 30 million Americans are currently at risk of losing their protection because most of us only have protection through our employer. 773-881-9555. That's the number to reach me at my office. One of the licensed representatives could speak with you and your family about what you have, making sure that you have what you think you have, and what will protect your family in the long run. Again, that number is 773-881-9555. For all of your insurance needs, questions, and concerns. Folks, keep in mind this hour is being brought to you by John Green and American Family Insurance. Always a pleasure to come to you each and every Sunday, 5:30, here broadcasting live from the city of Chicago. Great city. In fact, I hadn't been outside much today. Looks like it's a little cloudy, but you know Chicago, and you know why we call it the Windy City. So there you have it, folks. Last week, if you did not join the conversation, we had a very interesting conversation surrounding whether or not the N-word should be retired. You know the N-word that I'm talking about. Many of us, we use it casually among friends, family, and sometimes most of us at this particular point, it's anything goes, right? I believe one caller called in last week. He said that on the popular series umpire, there's a discussion taking place with Terrence Howard as to he feels as though the show would be a little bit more authentic if, in fact, he's allowed to use the N-word. He said, hey, this is how we talk, folks. Like, let's be real. It doesn't necessarily have the same social connotation that it did 50, 60 years ago. So let's be real. Let's be honest. This is what black people say. This is what we do. And not only is this what black people are saying among ourselves, we're standing around other people and things of that sort. You hear it in the music. So it doesn't necessarily mean the same thing. But, folks, that was last week's conversation, and we're going to keep the conversation moving. But if you did miss that conversation, you certainly missed a very interesting conversation. And as always, we have opinions and views on a number of sides there. So if, in fact, you want to go back and listen to that conversation, you can visit us again on our website. That's www.m-tas.org. If you go to the radio tab, look specifically for that particular conversation, and you'll find it, and maybe you can join the conversation online. We can revisit conversation, keep the conversation going, and things of that sort. Folks, again, 718-508-9533, 718-508-9533. That is the number to call today. If you want to have your voice and your ideas added to the discussion, just press 1 and we'll certainly get you in. Folks, what are we talking about today? Folks, we're talking today about the majority of million-dollar lottery ticket winners, right? That's what we're talking about today. We're talking about how many times the majority of million-dollar lottery winners, how do they go broke? What could possibly go wrong? That's the question that's on the table today here on MTAS Radio, folks. That's the question that's on the table today. How many million-dollar lottery winners go broke? What could possibly go wrong? That is what we're talking about, and that's what we're discussing today, folks. We want to find out from you, what are your thoughts about that, right? Someone coming to instant windfall of cash, certainly something that many of us, we work for on a consistent basis. We sometimes travel to the globe in pursuit of it, chasing a dream, right? Looking for more money so that we can perhaps pay off a mortgage, pay off college debt, or fund our children's college education and things of that sort. So we certainly know that money is a critical aspect to our existence, something that many of us is constantly in pursuit of and at the forefront of many of our thinking. So what happens to the individual that gets that lucky opportunity to come into millions of dollars instantaneously, but a few short years later, they go broke? So the question that's on the table, many million-dollar lottery winners go broke. What could possibly go wrong? I want to get your thoughts, views, and opinions on that particular question, right? Some have said up to 70% of lottery winners go broke. So we're talking potentially 7 out of 10 individuals who have the good fortune, in my estimation, of winning a lottery. How do you go broke so quickly? How do you go broke so suddenly, right? We often hear this whole notion, this idea about delayed gratification, right? The importance of delayed gratification, and those who are not successful in life, they're always looking for a quick fix, a shortcut, things of that nature, so they don't necessarily possess the spirit of delayed gratification. But how often do we talk about instant gratification? Because that's literally what happened when one hits the lottery, right? You go from rags to riches, so to speak. And sometimes that's not the case. Sometimes you have individuals, maybe they are, they're used to handling money, they're employed and things of that nature, but they're not used to having anything close to $2 million, $3 million, or $10 million at one fail swoop, right? I tell you this, prior to me getting involved in the insurance business, Part of the training, the part of the instruction, if you will, is you come into this idea that most of us over our working lives would certainly have earned anywhere from $1 million plus in terms of revenues that we've generated over maybe a 30-year or 40-year working history. But even when you try that to emphasize, many people still struggle financially, although if you talk about a 25 or 30-year working career, certainly many of us, just the average American will definitely have earned over $1 million. So when you talk about a household of two, maybe a husband and wife, I mean, those numbers could really shoot up. But what happens to the individual that comes into this particular, this type of windfall of cash, this type of fortune instantaneously? So, folks, that's what we're talking about today on MTAS Radio. But I want to share with you a couple of ideas here. I read from an article, and I will post this to my Facebook page as well as the MTAS page, called The Decadent Veil, Black America's Wealth Illusion. The Decadent Veil, Black America's Wealth Illusion. This article was written in the Huffington Post, HuffingtonPost.com. That's where you can find it, but I'll definitely post it on my website so that you guys won't have to search for it. But it gives some interesting statistics here. I'll just share this with you folks before I come to the phone lines. It says here, Federal Reserve numbers show that the median net worth asset and net worth, those of you who are not familiar with the term, net worth is assets less debt, right? Assets less liabilities, as some would say, or less debt. For white households in the top 1% is about $8.3 million. There you go, folks. So the net worth for white households in the top 1% is $8.3 million, while the median net worth for all white households is $112,000. So let's just slow down there for a moment, folks. What am I saying? What does that mean, right? So when you hear folks talk about the top 1% in terms of earners here in America, what are they talking about? Who are they talking about, first of all, and what are they talking about? So, and how do we quantify that? We're talking numbers. We're talking about wealth. And things of that nature, right? So we're looking here that it says that the top 1% of white households earn $8.3 million, and the median, right, the median net worth for all white households is $112,000. So keep that in mind. So that is the exact midpoint of America's 90 million white families. That is the exact midpoint of America's 90 million white families, where half or 45 million families have more and the other half possess less. That's a stat that makes for a staggering 74 times less wealth for the average white household. So we're talking the average white household net worth $112,000 and the 1%ers $8.3 million. So that's what's taking place financially speaking, economically speaking, in white America, if you will. So what's taking place in black America? What's taking place in black America? Try this on for size, folks. You go with that same idea, we're talking 14 million black families. The 14 million black families, those that's in the top 1%, those are in the top 1%. I'm trying to find the numbers here, guys. I'm sorting through this particular article. I actually lost the number. Okay, here we go here. The top 1% of black Americans, the top 1% of black Americans, we're talking 1.2 million. 1.2 million versus 8.3 million among white Americans. So the top 1% in black America, in terms of those families, have 1.2 million in terms of net worth. That's 200 times more the average, more than the average net worth of the average black family, which is that of $6,000. So we're talking the top 1% in black America, right, among black families in America, having a net worth of $1.2 million, and the average black family only having net worth being that of $6,000. So who do we talk about when we talk about the 1% in Black America? We're talking about many of your celebrities, right? Your Oprah Winfrey's of the world. I think Oprah is a billionaire though, so maybe she's not someone who we should just think about from the seat. She's certainly somewhat in the position in the class, not all about herself, but I think you folks get the point. But you're talking Oprah, you talk about Mike, who's also joined the billionaire club as well, as I've learned recently, some of your athletes, some of your celebrities, folks who you see on television, things of that nature. So oftentimes we think that is the case across the board, but certainly that is not the case, right? We're talking of the 1% of the 14 million. Think about this, folks. Of the 14 million Black households, the top 1% only represents 16,400 Black households, according to this particular article. So what does that have to do with today's conversation? Let's think about it, folks. When we talk about folks coming to a windfall of cash, right, and not necessarily having had the opportunity to experience wealth, to handle wealth, know what it's like to be in possession of that kind of money. What happens if you instantaneously come into $10 million, right? What do you do? Do you quit your job? Do you not tell anyone and things of that nature? What would you do? What would you do if that was your situation? Would you know how to handle that? Here's what inspired this particular conversation. I believe it was Stephanie shared with me on my Facebook. Those of you who listen to the MTAS broadcast certainly hear Stephanie's voice quite often. She shared with me on my Facebook piece this article that talked about this young lady. It was a blog piece. I'll share this again if you guys missed this. It says, Lotto winner blows through $10.5 million. Now she rides the bus to work, right? First time when I first saw this, I'm like, wow, that's a lot of money. How does that happen, right? You're thinking like, wow, you know, would I have done something like that? Or what was she thinking? You blow through $10.5 million and now you're riding the bus to work? How could anything like that occur, right? And you begin to go through this whole mental process as to could that be your predicament? Would you have ever done something like that? And oftentimes we see individuals like that and we look upon them in judgment. But could we really judge it from that standpoint? Is it just a matter of education? Because although the average individual probably will not or have not ever had this type of money in their hands at one period of time, but what happens? But how do you manage, or how do we manage $50,000 or $100,000 or $250,000, right? It's some of the same thinking, the same energy, the same mentality that we have, that this young lady have. But she just had more room to play or bigger budget to blow, if you will. So there you have it. That's what we're talking about. That's enough of me talking, folks. 718-508-9533. We're talking many million dollar lottery winners go broke. What could possibly go wrong? Also, I'm coming to the phone lines right now, 312. I believe that's Stephanie joining the conversation. Stephanie, is that you joining the conversation?
This is she.
How you doing this Sunday evening?
I'm well.
Good stuff. I'm pretty sure you'll be doing extremely well if you're like this young lady who quickly came into a windfall of $10.5 million. What would that do for you?
Quite a bit, but, you know, you have to take situations and learn from them so that you have to learn from others that you so you do not make the same mistake.
OK, Okay. You said learn from others so that we won't necessarily make the same mistake. All right. So let's think about that for a second. So certainly on the surface, we look at this as being a negative or a bad thing. What do you think we can gather from a story like this? And what do you think, what makes us any different? What makes us any different? When you first saw this, right, did you think, like, how does he do this? Or do you think probably the average person who's similar to her would probably do the same thing? The average person probably being people like you and I, because I think sometimes we stand in judgment when we hear stories like this. But it's like, have you ever possessed $5 million at one point, at any point in your time? And what do you do, and how would you handle it if this was your experience?
Well, just as you said, you learn from others so you don't make the same mistake. Yes, we are all subject to making those mistakes, especially when you have a windfall, when you're dealing with something most people have never had and never experienced and never, because if you look at the number of things that she purchased, she made the same mistakes that most of us do when we even get our tax in refund check. You know, just all of a sudden just blow it on the nonsense. All of a sudden you have come in with some type of money. So we come to... Sorry about that. We come to some situations and some ideas of believing that, oh, I wouldn't make that mistake. I'll get an investor. I'll get an accountant. I'll do this. I'll do that. We don't know what we would do. We get a large sum of money, a couple thousand dollars, and we actually go and we blow it. And within 3 months, the money's gone, and we're back to square one waiting for January to come back around again. So it's no different. Only difference is that her income tax refund in this case was over $10 million. So it's just all about just understanding that we all are subject of making, of doing certain decisions like buying things that we don't need, not positioning ourselves in position of being able to handle this, and also having it for it to make money for the money to continue to make money for us.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, I was just reading a little some of the details of this particular account of this young lady. It doesn't necessarily indicate in this particular article, and maybe I'll do a little research as to how old she was at the time of her winnings, and you know, was she in her early 20s? Was she in her early 30s? Because I think age and experience has a lot to do with how we think and how we go about handling different things in life and things of that nature. I'm reading here that it says here, and maybe you can recall, she gave her parents $1 million in cash, and she divided $1.75 million among her siblings. So she was being a little generous there, and it looks like it says she married her boyfriend at the time, right? I'm pretty sure if I was engaged to her, if I was a boyfriend, I would have married her upon $10 million as well. Smart move, right? But she bought a house for roughly about $500,000. So that wasn't, I mean, you have $10 million, a $500,000 home, not really saying a whole lot, right? You got average, you have average working family. I'm sorry, your phone breaking up there.
Okay, $500,000 is not bad. So she didn't really splurge too much on the home.
Yeah, it didn't really splurge too much on the home. I mean, you have average working folks who live in $500,000 homes, million-dollar homes. That's not really doing a whole lot there, right? And particularly when you're talking about two-parent household or two working individuals, I should say. But it also says here that she did the car thing roughly. She spent roughly about $200,000 on this elaborate sound system in this Cadillac truck. That's a bit much. It's like, okay, this $500,000 house that you own, a $200,000 sound system, I don't think your neighbors are going to be very happy about something like that. And then the rest, I think she kind of just blew through and things of that nature. But it also said that she at least attempted to put up some money for her children. But $10 million and you're riding the bus at this particular time. But what are your thoughts about that in terms of how she was able to take care of her family and things of that nature? That's kind of normal, wouldn't you say?
It's normal. I think what happens with us is that we want everybody to be just as comfortable as we are. So we feel that we, of course, take care of mom and dad, because I'm a big advocate of making sure that you take care of those who've given up everything to take care of you. And it's nothing but a pleasure to be able to give back to them. So I don't really discount her doing that for her parents, because it was $10 million of that. It wasn't that she was going in the poorhouse by doing that. So, of course, definitely. But I think when it comes to the idea of the mentality, and I think it goes back to what I used to say, the hood rich mentality, this whole idea of always having to look a certain way and the things that we purchase without establishing any type of way of this money making it a residual income and having it come back to us. And I think that's what happened. In our minds, we get a lump sum of money, and we see it. Like I think in the article, she said she looked at her bank account and she see all these zeros, and she never thought those zeros were actually dwindle down from 6 zeros or whatever how many zeros to 1 zero. So it doesn't dawn on you, and it dawned on her that eventually the money begins to. And then I'm told that her husband at the time, a boyfriend slash husband, had ended up going to jail. So I can just imagine a lot of that money was going to court cases, attorneys, legal fees. And so eventually, when you're talking about zeros not going, you know, you see nothing but zeros. But if you have to write checks with lots of zeros, eventually those zeros will dwindle. So
absolutely.
So I heard he had 2 cents, so I can tell a lot, probably a large portion of that money did probably go to that, and eventually that money began to slowly, because if I'm not correct, if you can tell me if I'm right or not, when you're dealing with any individuals who are dealing with criminal activity, those things are not something that is a short, it's a lengthy process. So you're talking about maybe 2 to 3 years of probably just processing and court cases and you know, going through that and fees and all types of stuff.
Wow, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that. No, I think you make a great point. I didn't even consider that. I did read that in an article about her husband having had the prison experience roughly about 2 times on this whole ordeal, mm-hmm. and that's a great point in terms of it's not cheap when we have family members who have that experience. I mean, when you're talking about collect calls, when you're talking about making sure that their safety while they're in there, that they have money and things of that nature, just lawyer fees. I think that's the bigger point, right? Lawyer fees, trying to make sure someone maintain their freedom. Yeah, you have to account for that. Yeah, you certainly have to account for things of that nature, and certainly if you visit attorney and now there and they have the idea that now you're in possession of $10 million, certainly my services is probably not going to be cheap at that particular point. 718-508-9533 718-508-9533. Folks, we're talking many $1 million lottery winners go broke. What could possibly go wrong? Some even say as many as 70% of those who are $1 million lottery winners eventually go broke. So, folks, we're having that discussion as to what could possibly go wrong. Stephanie, I'm listening to you, and I think you have some, you're making some phenomenal points. I saw an article earlier today that made me think as well, and it says here 12 things not to do if you win the lottery. It says 12 things not to do if you were to win a lottery. And the funny thing is that, when I was reading this particular article, it said that there's this notion that you only should have to get rich once, right? You only should have to get rich once. So it's this whole idea that, you know, once you're rich, you shouldn't necessarily go broke or things of that nature. I mean, you have a once in a lifetime chance, once in a lifetime experience. How do you lose it all? But you know, you said something that had me that brought something to mind earlier in terms of, you said she was looking at all the zeros and she never thought that it would go away. But let's bring that back home. Oftentimes we're the same way in a sense that, you know, we're in our 30s, we're in our 40s or whatever. Some might be listening there in their 20s. You never consider retirement as if you have the energy and the mindset to work forever, right? It's this whole notion of are you thinking about the future? Are you planning for the future and things of that nature, right? As you begin to spin, did you ever think that, you know what, after it's gone, it's gone? You know, the same notion that we about health, right? You know, I mean, after your body has been abused, you don't get a new body, So it's all about a thought process, a mentality, planning, preparation, and things of that nature. But getting back to this particular article about 12 things not to do when you win a lottery. And think about this, Stephanie, about some of the things that she did and some of the things that this particular article suggests. It mentioned the movie Brewster's Million. Do you remember that movie?
I do.
Yeah, it was an interesting movie, right? Back, I know we were children at the time. But it was a great movie. In fact, after I read it, I said, man, I want to go back and check out that movie. I think that was Richard Pryor. Was that Richard Pryor who played in that movie?
It was.
Richard Pryor, right. So he had a rich uncle or whatever, and I think the whole notion was that, you know, you spend $30 million in 30 days and you're gonna inherit $100 million, whatever. I think that was the whole piece. Now, this particular article, it points out to the fact that at that particular time, spending $30 million in 30 days was a major feat. We're talking the 80s, right? We're talking the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about, the point is different economic times, and that was a real challenge to blow through $30 million in 30 days. But this article points out in 2015, that's just not the case. It's not the case. It's easy to do it today versus then when this particular movie took place, and I thought that to be interesting, how different times changes the whole social and economic condition and things of that nature. But so those of you who haven't seen that movie, interesting movie, check that out. But here's the 12 points that he makes. Don't forget to sign a ticket or report it to the state. After I read that, I thought about it. Man, you know, sometimes I play, right? I think that my luck is going to change. So he said it's something, you know, never forget to sign it. Never forget to sign it because sometimes you could lose it or it could be stolen from you and things of that nature, and that's your claim. That's your claim on your winning. So sign your tickets. And you heard it first here, right? But I heard it from this particular writer. There you go. He said, don't forget to sign a ticket and don't tell everyone you know. Don't tell everyone you know. Don't automatically decide to take the upfront cash. I think that's huge. If you're used to earning anywhere from $50,000 to $70,000 a year, and that's what you're used to managing, and that's what you're used to, your lifestyle is consumed based upon just that. Now all of a sudden you get $10 million. That's going to be a bit of a challenge, right? So I get this point in terms of, you know, maybe you need to think about whether or not you should take all of the cash up front, right? So that's the point that he made. I think that's his third point. Don't think that you are the smartest person to manage your money and finances. That's another interesting point, right? You teach English for a living, or you teach music for a living, or John, you sell insurance for a living, right? That's a part of financial services, but I'm not involved in the stock market per se, right? So don't think you're the smartest person to manage your money and finances. Let your debts remain in place. Don't let your debts remain in place. She purchased a $500,000 home, $10 million. You purchased a $500,000 home. So the notion of what I'm thinking is that she still carried a mortgage because she lost it all. Now she's back riding the bus. So don't let your debts remain in place. Cancel the debt is some part of what this guy is saying. Now, I'm not a financial, but I would say something like that. You probably want to talk with your accountant, talk with your attorneys and things of that nature just to see if something like that would make sense, because there might be some tax liabilities and things of that nature. But think about the idea so that you can at least raise the appropriate question to the appropriate people. He said, don't become the generous high roller living life, right? You're used to a certain lifestyle. Now all of a sudden you want to become, you want to throw everybody a party. You want to buy everyone a house, right? You don't become the generous high roller. But he's saying that's not to say that you be stingy or you don't be considerate of those who are in need or different causes you may want to support. But you can't save the world. And that's probably, this was probably part of the challenge that this young lady had. don't buy everything for everyone and even yourself. Here's the thing I want to bring you back in on the conversation, folks. If you want to weigh in, 718-508-9533. Very important conversation here. Very great ideas. Some great ideas. Some great information is being shared here. Say to hell with a budget. Don't say to hell with a budget. So if you need a budget, if you're earning $70,000 a year, don't throw the budget out the window because now you come into millions of dollars, and I think that's huge. What's your take on that, Stephanie?
I agree 100%. You have to – one thing I noticed, one thing, you can't – just think about it like this. You're 320 pounds. You mysteriously lose 150 of that of those pounds. You don't discard your eating habits and your exercise regimen based off the fact that you've lost that much weight. You have to continue to live that lifestyle. So you have to condition yourself in order to maintain what you have because you're not used to being that small. So the same thing goes for you having money. I believe that you still have to get to a point, you have to condition yourself of understanding that money goes out the door. If it's not coming back in, it never comes back. So you cannot just lose it and just go spend everything and go to a new lifestyle that you're never used, that you're not used to. You have to condition yourself, get yourself in physical, quote-unquote, financial shape, so that you would never make the mistake of going completely bonkers. Like, you know, I know we always think about, black people always think about MC Hammer in that situation when he came into all of that as far as his superstardom and his music. And he decided he was going to save everybody. He was going to save the people in the neighborhood. He was hiring people for a guy on the street for $60,000 a year, and all this guy was doing was standing next to him. Or he was standing at the door. He would hire somebody just to open the door. I get his sincerity. I get his philanthropy. You know, I get all of that. I appreciate that type of heart a person has, but at the same time, he's not looking out for him and his family. And he wasn't physically, financially fit to understand that that wasn't the best decision for him to do because, once again, just like anything else, music and career are very emotional, meaning they go up and down. So guess what? His music began to go up, down. Then he's sampling, so he must pay out this. And everybody got their hand. So eventually he didn't know what else to do till he realized he was short. You know, he didn't have anything established. So you have to prepare and get yourself in shape in order. So to keep the budget is the best way of keeping yourself in shape.
Quick question for you. So when you say being financially in shape, right, you talk, and you may mention that's a great example of MC Hammer. They said that he would hire all of his buddies to become dancers, to support what he was doing musically and while he was traveling, right, as he was being an entertainer, right? You're going to look out for people, right? We all have our circle of people who we consider and things of that nature that if something like that were to happen, I will always think of that person or they'll be brought along with me and things of that nature. But you mentioned something. I think that was a very key thought and a very key idea. You said financially fit and financially shape. What do you mean? What do you mean when you say that? Are you alluding to the whole educational piece and the whole educational process?
Yes, I believe that. Because let's think about it. If you are somebody who has an addiction to food, or you've never eaten, and you are suddenly brought into a place where there is an abundance of food, what do you think is going to happen?
I don't know.
You're
going
to start gobbling. If you're hungry, you've only been used to giving two meals a day, and now you're in a place where you can have up to five or six meals, or you had very little, or you didn't have enough. You're going to get into this place. Your eyes are going to be bigger than your stomach, and you're going to begin to gobble and gobble and gobble and gobble and not think. It's like, so what happens is if you don't understand of kind of, you know, staggering yourself and proportions and understand what you're doing and make sure that you're not just overexerting yourself and doing things and we want to have fun. We want to be able to buy things we want without thinking. We like to go on vacation. But the thing is that we still have to realize is that we still have to be financially under. We have to educate ourselves financially, what we have, know what we have, pay attention to those who are educated that are taking down, we are putting in authority of what I have, having some type of education ourselves, because we can't be ignorant and just make everybody else have the education. We must be. Even though we're putting this person in charge of our funds, we need to be just as educated as he is or she is. So it's all about just making sure that you are physically, as far as financially fit and understanding what's going on, so no surprises. So you just can't expect somebody who's never had to understand how to really get themselves without losing their mind, because, of course, the first thing you're going to do is go buy the things you never wanted.
No,
I mean, you always want
it. I agree wholeheartedly, but to your point, you can't. We can't expect for someone who've never had that experience and know how to handle that experience, but certainly that becomes the responsibility of the person who's living the experience. Because once it's gone, it's gone. It's kind of what you have to do at that particular point, right? I read from a book that says, "To whom much is given, much is required." And part of that is now you have to take responsibility for what you're in possession of. 718-508-9533. 718-508-9533. Folks, we're having a very, very important conversation. My estimation, many million-dollar lottery winners go broke. Some say up to 70%. What could possibly go wrong? 708, I'm coming to you right now. What say you?
Hello, John.
Yes, yes, yes. How you doing, kind sir?
Hey, this is Bless, man. Hello to yourself and all your guests.
Appreciate you. Appreciate you for calling in. Appreciate you for checking in. What's on your mind, America's Coffee? We're talking money. What takes place in the mind of individuals who have this sort of experience? Do you think we can look in judgment, or do you think this is a common occurrence? And how do you process this?
Well, I agree with what everybody's saying. Everything starts in the mind, no matter what it is, whether we're dealing with physical health, financial health and wealth. Everything starts in the mind. And you take, for instance, you said she won some of many millions of dollars and she spent $500,000 on a house. It's like that person who can afford, they can afford the Mercedes, but they can't afford what it costs to get the oil change or when there's some type of maintenance problem. So it's all with the discipline and how we view financial wealth and our discipline when it comes to money. And what you don't know, you just don't know. And it's unfortunate that with anything, you know, with lack of knowledge, our people will perish. And you could have those millions, but it's how you view the you know, your financial situation, your discipline, and where your mind is when it comes to the money.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think you make an interesting point. But I will go as far as to say this, Les. Just because you can buy something doesn't necessarily mean that you can afford it. And what I mean by that is oftentimes credit allows for us to do many things, and that's not – now, that wasn't this lady's situation. Obviously, if you're in possession of $10 million, you could certainly you could buy and afford $500,000 home. But certainly there was a gap in knowledge, there was a gap in education that did not make it possible for her to maintain what she was able to purchase. So oftentimes, you know, you see people, they make major purchases and things of that nature, but they can't necessarily afford the maintenance and the upkeep.
Well,
so
yeah,
that probably
right.
Means that you can't afford it.
Right. Well, you're right. And if you think about it, some of us are people who think in the moment. At that moment, we say, you know what? I got $50 in my pocket. I love those pair of shoes. They're only $25. I have nothing else I need to purchase. I'm going to buy those shoes. And the truth of the matter is, when you have that kind of money, yes, it's $10 million. It's a lot. But a $500,000 home is going to require certain taxes, certain maintenance, and any little surprise could cost you to get in trouble with the IRS. Then comes penalty, and then if you're not financially smart, then you just start to plummet downhill. So you have to have that financial smarts to have the financial wealth. Not just having the money is not enough.
Absolutely. Having the money is certainly not enough. There's a huge responsibility that comes along with that, and I appreciate you for sharing that. 617, I'm coming to you now. What say you? We're talking money. We're talking instant gratification. What's on your mind? Hello. Are you with us? Not sure what's going on there, but certainly we'll try to get you back in. Folks, 718-508-9533, 718-508-9533. Stephanie, I'm listening to what Les had to say, and I think he makes some great point. And the last thing I heard him say in terms of money, you know, it takes a little bit more than money. There's some education that's associated with it. So how important, Stephanie, and considering what Les had to say, how important is it to connect with the right people and have the right people in your circle or network when it comes down to building wealth and trying to hold on to wealth, if you will? Because I think association becomes critical in everything that we do. What's your thoughts about that?
It's very important. One thing I do understand is that regardless of what financial place you're in, regardless of what type of neighborhood you're in, people need to be open to be able to meet others that happen to have a different mindset. When you're around those who are just about being quote-unquote hood rich, well, guess what happens when your situation comes around and you win $10 million? You're going to have only individuals who's going to be thinking about hood rich, meaning, hey, let's go buy Escalade who with a $10,000 sound system with turntables in the back, and let's not pay it off. Let's just get it where there's actually a note on that. Yeah, let's get a $200,000 house. That's great. You got a house. But, hey, by the way, you could have just went ahead and bought that home and just had the deed and just paid the taxes. Now, the thing is that those are individuals that don't necessarily have an understanding because of the education and lack of where they're from, and no disrespect from where they're from, but most people are not open enough to meet others or be around those who can possibly give them that education or introduce them to that education. But it's like
or
that.
Or information. Right,
exactly.
Or additional information, right? Because that's all it is just additional information. Because I think oftentimes what people fail to realize is that just as much, I mean, we can learn from everybody, and you can learn from anybody. Sometimes I hear Smoke sometimes say that sometimes what you can learn from people is what not to do. You know, it's not so much as to, you know, you're teaching me and I'm gathering from you what the right moves are, what the right books to read and things of that nature. Sometimes you can be around people, you can talk to people, you can listen to people, and you learn what not to do. And I think that's also important. And we also talk about, hey, I heard you mention you talk about hood rich. You know what? That's not necessarily, and I know sometimes we say that and it's a negative idea or a negative connotation associated with it, but there's people in neighborhoods, people in communities that have things that they can teach others, right? Because everyone gains something from their experience in life. And that's the reason why sometimes you can find some sisters and brothers that's from the hood, if you will. You put them in the corporate environment, and you know what? To some degree, they might be a fish out of water when it comes down to speech, when it comes down to etiquette, when it comes down to dress and things of that nature. But when it comes down to the way their mind works, when it comes down to understanding how money, the movement of money, they get that. But they only have the experience on their level. So it's not to say that people in certain conditions, in certain environments, don't have anything to offer or don't have anything by way of education. I often hear people say this, and I'll get back to you. I often hear people say that being broke is an event, but being broke is an event, but being poor is a condition. It's a condition. And oftentimes, I speak for me, you know, my family was broke. We weren't poor because I didn't know what poor was, you know. Certainly, we didn't have a family vacation and things of that nature. But every day, but when you talk about dignity, when you talk about pride, when you talk about resilience, my family had that. My family possessed that. And that taught me that although we might have been financially broke, meaning that we didn't have money per se to take the family trips, to visit downtown, to the Goodman Theater and things of that nature, they weren't poor. They weren't poor. Every day, even to this day, my mom, oftentimes she listens to the show, every day when she doesn't have anything to do, she gets up, she put on her clothes, she would call it, she make up her face and things of that nature, and I never, ever saw her go out in public looking a certain kind of way. So when you talk about a mentality and when you talk about a condition, that's what we're talking about. And oftentimes we tend to think that money tend to answer all of our problems, or money make us somebody that we're not. Money is not going to change who you are. It'll probably just change what you're able to do. But you get what I'm saying by way of that? I'm going to go to 617. 617, are you still with us?
Hey, John, how you doing?
Doing well, doing well. Sorry, my good friend, Shalonda. I certainly wanted to come back to you and get you in on the conversation here. What's on your mind? What's on your mind?
I was just laughing with my husband because I heard you say that money can't change who you are. I actually believe that it can.
Okay, talk to me.
I truly do because, you know, I was hearing earlier what Stephanie was saying in total agreement, and then I heard about, you know, MC Hammer and, you know, trying to help everybody around you, and he made some severe financial decisions that he ended up having to go bankrupt, having, what was it, like a 100-person entourage or something? And,
okay.
And I wish somebody could actually go back and check with all 100 of those people to see who actually managed their money properly. Because out of those 100 people, it wouldn't surprise me because if they all came from the same, you know, conditions, they probably were not educated enough or even, you know, during that time, it was all about image, having fun and having a good time. Many of those people probably did not save, you know, save anything for a rainy day. You know, but nowadays, you know, unfortunately, when people do, you know, either they win the money or they get into the entertainment industry or, you know, they get that one-hit wonder and become, you know, a rapper, everything about them changed. You know, the people who they change, you know, who they hang with, you know, they're able now to buy things that they couldn't buy. You know, now their self-esteem has changed. You know, people having plastic surgery, you know, to enhance their appearance based on, you know, what mainstream dictates how you should look.
See,
you know,
but here's what I would challenge you, Shalonda. Here's what I would challenge, and I hear you 100%. See, but I don't necessarily think that someone that's making an attempt to change their self-esteem, to change their sense of self-worth, but money can't do that. Money can't buy you that. You know, that's all superficial. We often hear, and I'll let you speak to this, we often hear that you can take the person out of a ghetto, but you can't take the ghetto out of a person, right? So we're talking about, so you can't necessarily just change, move someone and put them in a different environment, or all of a sudden you give them money and that changes who John is. John is who he's going to be. So if he already have a certain mentality, all of a sudden he get this money, don't you think he's the same person with this mentality? He's just a little richer?
Actually, John, I mean, at the end of the day, the reality of it is that, you know, who you are, you control who you are, you know, and your personality and things like that. And when people do get the opportunity to win money, you know, they want to improve who they are. You know, so therefore, you know, what's the saying, you know, oh, yeah, I got something new. Now I don't have the same friends. You know, it's not that same superficial nature that, you know, you had before. It's the fact that your level of thinking, you know, may have now changed because you don't want to be part of that particular group or that certain class anymore. You know, so now it may appear to your friends that you think you're better than anybody. You know, people who grew up in poverty and they struggle, you know, unfortunately, some of those people like that lifestyle. Others, when you pull that one individual who is like, I don't want to live like that, you know, even when you have the young ladies and the different ones who may have lived, you know, a certain way, once they've been introduced to a better way of living, some of those people like that. They love to have that opportunity and to change who they are because they're trying to become better people. You know, and sometimes when people do get those financial resources, some people do good with them and improve themselves and improve their lifestyles and improve their condition. So, therefore, money does have that effect. It's what you do with money and how you serve money, you know, is the power that you give it. I don't know if you read an article recently about the young lady who had won, like, $10 million or $20 million or something.
The one that we referred to earlier before you joined the conversation. If you could stay right there, Solana, but that's a great point, and that's actually what inspired this conversation today, and I appreciate you for sharing that. But and we have roughly about 5 minutes left in the conversation, and if you could take 30 seconds to answer this question, I'm going to get Les' take on this as well as Stephanie. Did your family talk to you and teach you about money, or was there so little money to go around the conversation didn't appear to be that important in roughly about 30 to 60 seconds? I just want to see if that was a conversation that was taking place in your household. Are you still with me, Shalonda?
Oh, I'm sorry, Jack. Could you repeat that real quick?
Yep. I just want to find out as quickly as you can, did your family teach you about money, or was there too little money to go around to deem that conversation important?
Well, pretty much, the mom, unfortunately, did not teach us. We had to learn the hard way. But I will say this, my mom managed what she had. You know, she, you know, was a single parent, you know, trying to raise two kids. And one thing I will say about my mom and give her credit for this is that she truly managed her money. With little education that she had, she didn't like the struggle, but she didn't, you know, she paid her bills on time. You know, I didn't see, you know, rent notices or anything like that. You know, but in watching that, I just didn't like the fact that we had to struggle so much. But I will say that, you know, little things that she did do, she learned how to manage what she had. Everybody doesn't have that discipline.
No doubt about it. So you kind of observed it, but that it wasn't necessarily an ongoing conversation. I appreciate that. Les, if you're still with me here, I want you to address that same question. How was it growing up for you? Did you learn about money, the importance of money, how to grow money, the language of money in your household?
Well, what I learned about money, I learned from my father because my mother was the homemaker. She took care of the 7 kids. And thank God the lessons that I learned from my father I did not carry into my life. And I believe that I'm more successful than he was because my mom taught me values. She helped build character. And so I make good decisions about money only because of the man that I am. Not about the lessons I learned about money. So, and just in furtherance, I have to agree with Shalonda. I believe people have the choice to change who they are, and money is powerful. Don't make no mistake. Money is powerful. It could make us a better person, or it can tear us down and destroy us.
I appreciate that. Stephanie, as quickly as you can, I want to find out from you, too, about that whole – I want you to weigh in on that same question if you're still with me. I have to open up your mic again. What was it like in your family? Did they teach you about money? Did you hear money being discussed in your household? Is your mom talk to me a little bit. What was that like for you?
Well, I was the only child, and I was raised just by my mom, but – one thing I can respect about my mom as far as when it comes to, we didn't have necessarily discussions, but I do remember when I actually went to Catholic school pretty much all my life. And I remember as I got older, my mom would literally, every time there was tuition that would need to be paid, this is how I learned how to write a check. I would literally write the check out for my tuition. And she would see me and say, okay, look at the bank book and this is how much is in there. And this is how much your tuition is. Now I need you to take that money and I need you to put it in there. I need you to subtract from them how much we have left. That's something I did learn. Now, the question is, did I possibly take that in? I took it with me, but did I learn? I'm learning as I go, and there's some things I kind of mess up on and things I'm still learning, but I do remember the importance of that part of my mom and how she was able to be able to take care of just me and also pay for me to go to school on her salary, which was not that much, and I was still able to travel, and she was still able to let me go places and how she was able to budget that. So I can say that was my lesson as I grow older and as I try to learn more to get back on my feet as far as those things, as far as money's concerned. I think of that, and that's what kind of propels me through.
I appreciate that. Great input there. Les, I have at least 30 seconds for you, and I want to let you have a final word on today's conversation here. Certainly always good to hear from America's Coffee here. Les, do you think we can come into possession of money and opportunities prematurely? What's your take on that? I don't know if Les is still there, if I lost him, but Stephanie, I don't know. In 30 seconds, what's the thought about that? Maybe I lost Les. Yeah, I believe we lost him here. Do you think we could come into money and opportunities prematurely?
Yes and no, but yes in some cases, depending on those who do not have an understanding of the importance and what the valuable tool it can be used as and what we can possibly do. One thing I can respect about the young lady before you cut off is that she did put a trust aside for her children, so at least her children are going to be okay. So someone had to be in her ear to let her know that. So one thing about money is it can be used as a harmful tool, but it also can be used to actually help build and help supply and do what we
appreciate
need.
Appreciate you. Appreciate everyone for calling in today as we had a very important conversation. As always, remember to join us at www.m-tas.org. Folks, remember over 30 million Americans are currently at risk of losing their life insurance protection. If that is your situation, 773-881-9555 is the number to call. Reach me Monday through Friday. Remember, this hour is being brought to you by John Green and American Family Insurance. Join us online, www.m-tas.org. Folks, remember, the community in which we live, the society in which we reside, is a community and society that we create. I am responsible. You are responsible. We are able to respond. Until next week, continue to be good to yourselves and good to your families. Take care.